Broadcasting from behind the Second Amendment Iron Curtain in the shadows of the New York City skyline, this is Gun for Hire Radio, the voice of 1 million New Jersey gun owners, with your hosts, Sandy Berardi and Master Firearms Trainer, Anthony Calandra.
The weekly gathering place for over 1 million freedom-loving gun owners. The most listened to Second Amendment broadcast in the nation. Welcome
yes.
to it.
This is show number 340, our highest
We're
number show
yet.
We're at
the 330s now.
Yes, and I got a little notification on Facebook 2 days ago. This is 7 years since we taped show
seven
number
years.
Uno.
Yeah.
Okay, 7 years
was
with
right
this
at
some bitch.
Thanksgiving, wasn't it? Thanksgiving
day? Yes, it was right yeah. around there. We taped it in the Belleville. Location
yeah.
and off we went,
which was basically an old retail room that we made a closet out of.
Yep, it was we sold clothing out of Gun for Hire swag out of it, and we turned it into a radio studio.
And it worked well because the clothing,
the
was
shirts
still in
and sweatshirts absorbed some of the sound
yeah.
from your hollow voice. People couldn't even tell about your lisp or your stutter or your Tourette's.
No,
it
marked it off.
So we have two distinguished guests, in the show today, and one is a shooter and a Gun for Hire alumni and a Facebook ho and social media Instagram like me. He comments on a lot of stuff that I post, and I like his angle. I like his presentation. A little rough around the edges sometimes, but he's young. How old are you, Dave?
29 years old.
I'm twice your age. So it's David Mergel, who's on the show, show 340. He's sending me messages and shit. I'm like, dude, you're blowing up my phone. Just come on the show. This is why I don't have to type shit, okay?
You gotta do what you gotta do, man. You know, stay committed.
Thank you. And we have another New Jersey supporter who happens to be a doctor of psychotherapy as well. And a gun guy, and approached me a few months ago about expressing an interest in coming on and sharing some views and some stories and support, because the receptive doctors in the psychotherapy field in New Jersey, you make number three. Okay, so there's three.
Yeah.
There's only three that I know of, and I know everybody. So so I wanted to share everybody. It's Dr. Gerard Optoff.
He wants to be called Jerry. Is the third in Jersey, or is he over in PA?
No, one is way down south, exit 3 on the turnpike,
yeah.
and then one a little further up, and then Dr. Optoff, who's here. So say hello, guys.
Hi, how you doing, guys?
We're gonna get into it. I want to make an announcement.
Should
first.
I be lying down?
If you'd like to.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. A few days ago, the House Judiciary Committee voted 19-11. 19-11. It's interesting.
Coincidence.
They voted 19-11. Three Democrats in the of the 19, by the way, voted for H.R. 38, Representative Hudson's bill for national reciprocity. Okay, now what that means is they have a couple of days to firm up the language, and then it goes to a full House vote, which we have to hope Paul Ryan puts it up for a full House vote. Then it would go to the Senate committee, full Senate vote, and President Trump said he would sign it. This is the closest we've ever been, gentlemen,
There's
in the studio
news.
And listeners in 30 years. Our New Jersey legislators are holding a seance right now.
Yeah.
Because we're going to go down kicking and screaming. Right away, they want to play the 10th Amendment, 14th Amendment bullshit. But as Knappen has said, and I have studied, and I'm no scholar, but states do not have rights.
Correct.
States have powers.
Right.
We, the people, have rights.
Right. The government does not have
okay?
rights.
Okay. So if they want sanctuary cities and sanctuary states to in the face of federal government, but now we have to follow. The states are allowed to do their own thing, et cetera. It's a bunch of bullshit.
What don't you understand about this?
I know. Well, we have enough votes in the House and the Senate for full House votes to get this through. There was 19 amendments. 16 were struck down. 3 were kept on.
We can't even get
okay.
Obamacare repealed.
Correct.
We cannot get.
Sandy, this is close.
We can't.
They
man.
Knocked down an amendment, okay, where us guys in this room, if you have a non-resident carry permit for any state, Florida, New Hampshire, Virginia, or whatever, you will be able to carry in New Jersey. That is still in Hudson's Bill. It's in. Yeah, all the Dems tried to knock the shit out of that.
Yeah.
Okay? Even Florida, a congressman from Florida tried to knock it out, which is bullshit. But anyway, the problem is there's no similar provision in the companion Senate bill as written. So it's going to have to be an amendment that someone's going to write so we don't get blocked out. And I don't think we're going to get blocked out. Sandy, listen, we are 30% of the way there. This is the closest we have ever been. It's H.R. 38, and I recommend all of you listening to the show, go online, contact your legislators, and tell them to support H.R. 38. Democrat or Republican, whoever they are, because we need to get a full House vote. From what I understand from NRA Isla, Paul Ryan's feet, the Speaker of the House, his feet are going to be put to the fire next week by NRA to put it up for a vote to get moving on this, because Trump has said numerous times he would sign it. So we have a little levity here because, you know, our new governor is going to take a lot of our rights away at the state level, but we might end up with 5-round magazines, no ARs, and we'll be able to carry a gun in New Jersey. I mean, holy shit!
A single
shot. As long as you don't have that big scary AR, you're good to go.
Well, yeah, because with the evil features, they're going to add 10 more evil features. Oh, it's black, no good. You know, you can only have it's got to be Snow White.
Right.
You know, California, the magazine's riveted into the AR, and it's single shot top load. That's what they want in New Jersey, all right? So definitely Loretta Weinberg a couple days ago felt a strong disturbance in the force. But here's what's going to happen, though. If Trump signs it immediately, 5 or 6 states are going to file federal lawsuits.
Of course.
Okay? And it's going to be a fight. But, you know, we also have the Equal Protection Act. We have the 10th Amendment. We have strong arguments because here's the deal, Doc. So I live in New Jersey. I can't carry in New Jersey. You live in Pennsylvania, and you can carry in New Jersey. That's how it's going to be if it's signed.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's not fair. Okay? Right. So I think it's pretty blatant that it's going to go through. So this is, again, we've been talking about this 7 years on the show. National reciprocity, making a carry permit like a driver's license. Cross your fingers and toes, ladies and gentlemen. H.R. 38. Contact your legislators. When we come back, the doc is going to share some stories and give us some advice.
I want to tell you about my friend Katie. Katie is a nurse, and she was attacked on her way home from work. She was totally taken by surprise, and although Katie is only 5 feet tall and 106 pounds, she was easily able to drop her 6'4", 250-pound attacker to his knees and get away unharmed. Katie wasn't just lucky that day. She was prepared. In her pocketbook, a harmless-looking lipstick, which really contained a powerful man-stopping aerosol propellant. It's not like it was in our grandmother's day. Today, just going to and from work or to the mall can have tragic consequences. The FBI says a violent crime is committed every 15 seconds in the United States, and a forcible rape happens every 5 minutes. And chances are, when something happens, no one will be around to help. It looks just like a lipstick, so no one will suspect a thing, which is important since experts say getting the jump on your attacker is all about the element of surprise. Inside this innocent-looking lipstick is the same powerful stuff used by police and the military to disarm even the most powerful armed aggressor. In fact, National Park Rangers use the very same formula that's inside this little lipstick to stop 2,000-pound vicious grizzly bears dead in their tracks. It's like carrying a personal bodyguard with you, in your purse or your pocket. Darkness brings danger. Muggers and rapists use darkness to their advantage. We all know what it's like to be walking at night and hear footsteps coming at us from behind. Who's there? If it's somebody bad, will you be protected? Your life may depend on it. My friend Katie's close call needs to be a wake-up call for all of us, myself included. Pick up a lipstick bodyguard and keep it with you always.
The world's becoming a dangerous place for us women. Lipstick Bodyguard looks just like an innocent little lipstick, but it'll instantly drop any attacker to his knees so you can get away unharmed.
And what better way to say I love you than giving the ones you love a gift to keep them safe? Lipstick Bodyguard. It looks just like a beautiful little lipstick. But just like a beautiful woman, it has the power to bring a grown man to his knees.
Lipstick Bodyguard, fear no evil. Get yours today, only at lipstickbodyguard.com.
Just follow the link on the gunforhireradio.com homepage.
And this segment is brought to you by Liberty Office Suites. Two locations, one on New Road in Parsippany and one on Changebridge Road in Montville. So, Dave, the way Liberty Office Suites works, if you had a little side business for as little as $58 a month, like, Doc, you could rent an office out for the day to meet a client in North Jersey if you were located in South Jersey. Right. That's how Liberty works. And it would look like it's you're there every day.
That's great.
So $58 a month, you too can have a professional environment, Liberty Office Suites. So, Doc, I just read an article on International Business Times. And this was by a woman named Ilana Gloatz, and she said that gun addiction, white men are emotionally attached to firearms. She did a study and said the people who have the strongest emotional attachment to their guns are white guys who are under financial stress.
I read that study.
Yeah. How do you feel? How do you feel about that?
Oh, well, this is the first time I'm hearing of it. Did it include flannel shirts also?
No.
And suspenders. And suspenders.
But it was done by an anti-gun group.
Baylor
was,
University.
Yeah, well, it was funded by our buddy George Soros.
Of course. Every town gun safety.
And they funneled it through. It was published in a journal in the UK, which we know, of course, look at gun owners in the U.S. as if it's some sort of pathology.
Right. Well, that's the problem with any studies. You always have to look at who's funding and what's the agenda.
Exactly.
There's always an agenda to the study. And
you're
going to shoehorn it a little bit to get what you want.
A preformed conclusion as to what – if you want to get funded for the next study, you have to provide the outcome that was stated in the beginning.
Well,
otherwise,
you're completely right with that. But, you know, when you do any study, you have an outcome, a hypothesis you want to prove.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to spend all the time and energy doing it to go, oh, I was wrong. So you're going to shoehorn at times, let alone who's funding it.
And yes, exactly. You know,
somebody's always digging in the pockets.
Right.
Sure.
I mean, every time you watch one of those, you know, don't eat meat, you know, documentaries, and, you know, here's everyone who's funding all the meat industries, and, you know, you freak out. So it's always, you know, biased.
You see people obviously all the time, and we have a real paradox in New Jersey, because I have people come to me for years and say, you know, I'm not feeling well, I'm going through a divorce, my kids are a problem, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, but I'm afraid to go seek help because I don't want to lose my guns.
You're right.
So you deal with this daily, right?
Exactly. Well, I mean, I see people for individual couples therapy. My specialization's in addictions and trauma issues. Another part of my practice, I do evaluations for men and women who have a lot of times been denied for gun permits, and their attorney sends them to me to help evaluate to see if there's really a risk or not. So, yeah, it comes up a lot. I've had people that I know personally and many clients who, you know, come in and they are concerned about that. I had one client, about a year or so ago, who hadn't seen in a while, called up. He was freaking out, was having some marital problems and, you know, was very upset about it. And I knew he was a gun owner. And one of the things I said to him is, do me a favor. Take them out of the house, give them to your family, you know, your parents live upstate, give it to them so that if something comes up, those aren't in the house.
Right.
You know, and he was smart enough and he listened. And, you know, it was probably about 6 months later that there was a knock on the door and, you know, the police were like, hey, we got these complaints and these concerns and where are they? And he's like, hey, not here. You know,
so it's a tough position for you, because if you have to give somebody an approval that they can get their guns back, like write up your opinion,
mm-hmm.
you have to make sure they're not fooling you too.
Sure.
So there's a lot of process that you have to. It's not like we sit down for 15 minutes and you slap me on the back and say, you're okay, go pick up your Uzi, right?
Exactly.
I mean, it doesn't happen.
No,
that way.
It's you know, 6, 8 or plus sessions of meeting with someone. Because I tell people, like, anyone can hold it together for, you know, a day or two.
Sure.
It's over time you start seeing, you know, the cracks in the armor, and you're like, okay.
Because the advice I give to people when they come to me, I'm like, listen, your health is more important than your personal property. Go get help.
Right. And that's why I reached out to you, Anthony.
It
was, you know, as much as the evaluations are fun and they're great to help people out, because most of the people that I see don't have problems and shouldn't be denied. It's always these, like, really quirky things. Like, at 22 years old, you got a DWI, and now at 48 years old, you go for a gun, and you're denied because you had a DWI when you were 22 and
mm-hmm.
you're stupid.
Yeah. I actually know a kid that got denied his FID card in New Jersey simply for the fact that he lives in a house with his sister, who
is an had alcoholic, problems. Has a lot of problems, gets in a lot of fights, gets arrested all the time. They denied him, even though it wasn't
year,
because of the address.
30-year career security officer, armed, denied the renewal on his carry permit because his son had an opioid addiction.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And then very he sad. Appealed it, and he got it, and the judge and the prosecutor made him sign a thing and had the police, Montville police, come in, take a picture of his safe where he said he was going to lock the gun up every time he was in the house because they were afraid the kid was going to steal it to go rob a gas station or sell it for $10 to get high.
I mean, it's understandable.
Yeah, but
it's
what,
a lot
it's
of
an invasion of
through.
Your privacy.
Yeah, it's
this guy was 55 years old. And they were treating him like a child, you know. Yeah. He can't be responsible for his son, but he wasn't going to leave his gun laying on the nightstand at night.
Yeah.
But it, the lunacy of New Jersey is that once the bell is rung, if there's any type of old complaint or record or there's a TRO, a temporary restraining order or something, then you got to go see Dr. Optoff.
Right.
And you got to prove to him that you're legitimate.
That's the problem with the left side, too, is they don't understand all the things that we go through, the hoops that you got to dive through to own a firearm
in
New Jersey.
I've been in this game 30 years. You know how many green people come in here? They want a gun because something happened. House was broken and robbed or something.
Yeah.
I explained the process. They look like they got hit by a semi, right? And then they come back 6 months later and go, I finally got my gun. I was treated like a criminal. Because the media says, you and I walk in a store. Can I get a thing of Tic Tacs? Let me have two AR-15s, 10,000 pounds of ammo, silencer, a bump stock, a full auto thing. I want two more silencers. And you know what? I want a Loudner,
couple
too.
Grenades.
Yeah. But that's what they think, that we can just walk in and buy them. They don't know the process. So Doc, tell us about some of the things that you deal with in general. I know you can't tell us about specific cases, but it's disheartening. You see people come in with their hearts torn out, right?
Right. I mean, that's – and as I started saying before, is that that's why I reached out to you because, you know, everyone's dealing with stuff, and you kind of alluded to it before. I mean, whether it's, you know, issues with your children, marital issues, and yet this fear of going to talk to someone. I mean, we talk about the stigma with being a gun owner, let alone the stigma with mental health.
Correct.
You know, one in five people have some diagnosis of mental health. We're not all schizophrenics and hearing voices, you know, anxiety, depression.
That's not normal?
That's not normal.
Oh.
You know.
We have to talk a little later.
That's the voices in my head today, but I think it's the head, the headset here. But, you know, we have these issues, and to talk to somebody, and people are afraid of, if I go to talk to someone, I'm going to be crazy.
Sure.
You know, I have to be crazy to go talk to someone. They're going to give me a diagnosis. I'm going to be crazy. If I want to somewhere down the road get a gun, that's going to come up because now in New Jersey, when you apply for a gun permit, you got to sign off for, you know, your medical records to be looked at so they can see if you've been treated for a mental health issue. So
I was very worried about it as well. I was going through a year ago through a lot of anxiety, not depression, you know, nothing like that. It was just trouble sleeping and a lot of stress was piling on. I lost my father and I was taking on college as well. And, you know, I was going through a lot of issues, having like panic attacks, getting the shakes, you know, stuff like that. Nothing. It doesn't mean that, you know, you're going to go and do something crazy. You know, not everybody's crazy. And that's the thing. I felt like, am I losing my mind? You know, I was really nervous about it.
But you'd be reluctant to go for help.
Yeah.
Because you're a
gun owner. Exactly what happened. I was terrified to go talk to anybody.
It's a double. You're judged if you want to get help anyway. Most men don't get help. And then if you're aware of, like, if you listen to the podcast and you know the problems, I'm not going to go get help because it might affect my gun ownership. Like, it's not going to.
You're not going away. We have three more segments. For many people walking into a range the first time, it's quite intimidating. So when you walk in through the double doors, the first thing you'll see on your left is a concierge. When people walk in, they can take a tour of the range, or maybe they're coming in for an appointment with one of my instructors or me, and they'll be directed to the right classroom. It kind of softens the entire experience. It makes people feel more at home. As you walk further into the range, you're going to notice we have New Jersey's only indoor 50-yard range, which is heated and air-conditioned. The dividers in each port are bulletproof. They're extra-wide ports so two people can stand side-by-side and shoot. There's lights in the ports, so you're well-lit. We also have three times as much light downrange that the average range would have because I believe it's important that the targets are well-lit. Our target retrieval system is all digital. You program how many feet you want to send it out, and it stays there. Both of our ranges are tactically baffled, which means when we run our higher level courses, you can move forward to the firing line and shoot in any direction, and bullets can't escape. When you come out of the 50-yard range, to your left, you'll see our large classroom, and go back up to the concierge and make a right, we have two smaller classrooms. And those classrooms are for small one-on-one classes, our Build-A-Bear, building an AR. As you enter through there, you'll see that we have a portal with a key to go into our Platinum Lounge. They can sit around and watch TV on the leather chairs or couches, and they can maybe work deals with their clients. And you normally don't see a cafe in an indoor range. In New Jersey, we have this archaic law where you're only supposed to go from your house to the range to the house with no unnecessary deviations. I'm seeing a lot more families coming in now where they have multiple kids and the wife will stay in the cafe with one or two kids and they'll do a handoff. To me, it's very important that people are treated like family. So the bathrooms are very high end. We use marble and corian and really nice tile and full length dividers so that people are comfortable when they come in. When you exit the bathroom, you'll see the Gun for Hire radio studio where Sandy and I tape our show. After you pass that and you make a left, you'll notice our retail area. Over 120 firearms for rent. As you turn 180 degrees, you see the large sections of bulletproof glass. That's our 25-yard range. And inside our 25-yard range, we have 13 ports. Those ports are even wider than the 50-yard range. Both ranges have full-time range safety officers. In case you have any questions or concerns, they're there to help you.
With the news, events, and political shenanigans impacting your freedom, you're listening to Gun for Hire Radio, the most listened to Second Amendment broadcast in the nation.
And this segment is brought to you by GunSitters. GunSitters.com, locations opening up everywhere, Easton, PA, Salisbury, Maryland, and of course on Route 10 East in Whippany, GunSitters.com. Now what the doc was talking about before when he advises people to put their guns at family members' houses, that's legal with long guns, not handguns in the state of New Jersey. But GunSitters to the rescue, all right? Mm-hmm. So if the doc has somebody come in and say that, you know, they're having problems or their daughter or they're going through a divorce and their wife might or their husband might pull a TRO, call up GunSitters, GunSitters.com, because I went through a similar thing, mm-hmm. and I got rid of my guns, and I put them all into business, and but then the bell was rung, and it started with the TRO, and I had to go through a whole valuation, so I know it. But GunSitters.com is what you need, and keep them in mind. Now, Doc, I've talked about this numerous times. We took mental health first aid. Woodland Park is a stigma-free zone. It started in Clifton. Now it's gone national. So there is a stigma. If David is a diabetic, go get insulin, get pills, whatever. If I have heart disease and I have to take medication every day, no big deal. I'm no less of a man. Right. If I have mental health, I must be weak. Mm-hmm. That's the stigma we have in our country, which prevents people from getting help properly. And then the stigma that's put on us by the legal system is a double whammy. Because if I go see Dr. Optoff, he's going to have to report it. Now what am I going to do? But if I go see Dr. Optoff, and then he writes me a letter after 20 visits, if I start seeing him monthly or something, that I'm okay to own guns. When you go fill out your paperwork, you have to answer question 25. Have you ever been treated inpatient, outpatient, mental health? You could write yes, see attached. You have a letter from the doctor. Police chief will sign off on it, and judge will sign off on it, and prosecutor if need be. It's a slam dunk, but everybody thinks once that bell is rung, there's no going back.
That's true.
So talk about that. Talk about the stigma. Dave, I made an appointment for you with Dr. Optoff for next week. All right.
Next week, we're doing it right after the show.
I'm going to go lay down on the counter.
During the break.
Good to go.
I just want to point out there's actually no couches in my office. It's actually all chairs. Yeah, I got away from that
lying
cliche.
Down thing.
Damn, that lying thing.
Yeah, I'm not coming now.
I feel like the lying down, does that make people more uncomfortable?
No, but you know, more nervous? It's funny, like we're joking about the lying down thing, right? But that is from literally the 1930s with Freud.
See, stereotypes? Yeah.
We're still holding on to that stereotype.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, we're not sitting there behind, like, I don't sit behind you, you're not laying on a couch, like, but that's the stereotype people have. And
you're on the pad and pen. Just
exactly.
Mm-hmm. How does that make you feel?
Mm. Exactly. Yeah. You know, and that's the stigma. And that's what keeps people from getting help in general, and keeps people who, you know, just want to, you know,
especially
talk to someone.
Especially people that are on edge, you know. They're already nervous as it is. Mm-hmm. They think of that stereotype, and they get shaky. You know, they start to think, oh, I'm going to have to lay there. I'm going to be, you know, like the
I'm gonna
spotlight.
Be crazy.
Yeah, I'm going to be the crazy guy. And
you know,
just
Matt Lauer has couches in his office.
I've heard about that.
There
okay.
we go.
And a Murphy bed. So, Doc, continue. We got the expert here. Dave, keep interrupting the doc, but keep talking to us, brother.
But talking about the stigma and stuff, I mean, you hear people like Howard Stern, who's talked about, like, he was in psychoanalysis 3 times a week for like 20 years of his life. But for most people, you're not going to therapy three times a week. You're not going for life. I tell most people by 6 to 8 sessions, either we'd like each other or we hate each other, and right. this isn't going to work. I'm not going to see you just to see you. You know, or you just might need to come in and vent about whatever's going on and getting some solutions and go back on your in with your life. I'm working to write an article to kind of get out there that when you talk about the stigma with mental health, it's the same thing. If you have heart disease, you go check in with your doctor every yep. year or every yep. 6 months to see how you're doing. We've all bought into the diet, the dentistry that we go every 6 months, we get our teeth cleaned. But if you go to mental health, well, you go and you leave and that's it. And I always say to my clients, you know, check in every 6 months.
Tune up.
Yeah, check in. We all have stuff going on. You know, you might be fine today. And as David shared, you know, a little while ago, his father died last year. Maybe he needed to come back in and talk to a therapist that he felt comfortable with. And it could be 4-6 sessions. Okay, I'm feeling better. You know, I got to go through that process and he goes back on his life.
I went through the friends, you know, talking right. to the friends, talking it out, you know, going through that whole thing. Mm-hmm. And,
you know, but you didn't internalize it. I'm no doctor, but it's good that you didn't internalize it.
Yeah, if you let it all bottle up, it's eventually going to explode. Something fills up inside enough, you're going to let it out, and that's where the problem is. You
right.
know, people like you said, are afraid to go and get the help they need, and that's a huge issue. Right? If they keep bottling it up, it's going to be a problem in the future.
That's good.
Sure.
So you must you know, people must come to you in desperation as well, too, right?
Yep. A lot of times, a lot of people come in because they're forced to. A probation officer, a spouse, you know, you have a problem. You need to go talk to somebody. You get that. They come in because they're in desperate need of whatever, and you're just helping them through it.
You know what's helpful? As someone like you that's a shooter that has guns and stuff, you understand the process and the plight as well,
mm-hmm.
Where someone that doesn't have that, you know, background doesn't understand. Like Dave was saying before, like people think we could just go in a store and buy a gun. Most doctors in your position wouldn't realize what's at stake for somebody like David
right.
To go see a doctor, how it changes the whole dynamic.
Sure.
Because in David's head, he's thinking, what if he doesn't give me a letter at the end of 6 or 8 sessions?
Right.
Now I'll never yeah, hold a gun again. But on the other hand, if you didn't give him a letter at the end of 6 or 8 sessions, he probably shouldn't have guns anyway. He probably, even though he's telling himself he's okay, he might not be okay yet.
Well, I think it's important to find a person who understands, like, and when we're talking about gun ownership and stuff, someone who understands some of the rules, the regulations, what you go through, what you're looking for. Because, you know, with every field, there are those in my field who, oh, I treat everything and I know how to address everything. No, you don't. You know, I don't work with children. I don't want to work with children. So I can't say that, you know, oh, I can help kids. You don't. So you really should be looking for somebody if you're concerned with, you know, gun ownership, whether you're going for a gun or you have one and you're having problems, to talk with someone who might have a background, you know, or an understanding of this, so that you're not like, oh, he says he has a gun, we should call, you know, and put that he's a risk. He may not be a risk.
Do you ever have to go in court?
Yes. Actually, I was supposed to testify this week.
Is it interesting sometimes with the prosecutors that don't know or they have an agenda trying to deal with them?
Everyone has an agenda.
Well, yeah, but an anti-gun agenda.
Yeah. It is interesting. There was one I testified in a couple years ago, and I'm always amazed by it because the trial occurred and the chief of police and detectives that investigated this gentleman, you know, were all testifying about why he shouldn't have one, and then I testified and... You know, at the end of it, the judge ruled that this gentleman could get his FID card.
Nice.
Right.
Solid win.
Solid win. But yeah. You're sitting there and you're listening to this testimony and why he's so bad and evil and he shouldn't have this. And then once the judge rules in his favor, everyone's kind of out in the hallway and they come up to him and go, hey, you know, sorry about all this. You know, come in tomorrow. Sign the if you ever have any problems.
Act like buddy.
Right. You know, and I'm so like, I was just standing there like, wow. But
so
20
fake.
Minutes ago, you were painting this picture of how... You know, he's this evil being.
I feel like you're back in high school with the cliques.
It's just
their
job.
Right.
I said that was an eye-opener for me. I was going through a contentious divorce. There is no others, I guess. And my lawyer, female, I'm going to kill her. I'm going to, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then we went to court for an appearance, and our courtroom got changed from the 3rd floor to the 5th floor, and the 4 of us got on the elevator, me, my soon-to-be ex, and both. And the 2 attorneys are standing behind us. We're not acknowledging each other. The 2 attorneys, how's the kids? See you this weekend at the barbecue?
Right.
Are you playing tennis at the club this week? I'm like, right. Son of a bitch.
Yep.
And the same thing happens with the prosecutors and the attorneys.
That's how I knew it was a scam from that point on. That every dollar I spent after that was just stupid money, and I just had to get through it because I was like duped.
At least
I thought she was in my corner. It's bullshit.
It's a, like, family law is a small community.
Yep.
You know, there's only so many lawyers who do that. Yep. They all know each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think they sit in a room and go, he's got this, she's got that. This is the end run. I think we can get 8 months out of it.
Right.
We can go about 200. This thing, that thing.
Right.
Break, you know, from the huddle.
Pretty much.
And then, you know, it's the son of a bitch.
Right.
They must laugh at each other. Yeah, they must laugh when they send nasty emails to each other.
Oh, yeah.
Because then they probably call each other up. What do you think? Do you think they like that one we sent? Yeah. I've lost all faith in that
system. Okay, so now Anthony's paranoid. You know, we're just sitting here diagnosing. Yeah.
He's getting fired
up
right now.
Oh, no. He's psyching me. Oh, no.
Now, that's, there are some things that are beyond the ability of human beings.
The other piece, too, is that, you know, what you're being diagnosed with has a huge impact also somewhere down the road, is that, you know, there's this big book, the DSM-5, and we use it to diagnose people, and that has...
I want you to talk more about that when we come back.
The two most precious things you can give someone. No cell phones, no video games, no electronic devices. No interruptions. Just your favorite gun, a couple boxes of ammo, and time spent together. The folks at Gun for Hire Woodland Park Range believe there's no time like the present, and no present like time. Step through their doors, and you'll feel time stand still. It may look like a luxury shooting range, but what they really sell is the perfect day. And perfect memories are made from perfect days. Gun for Hire Woodland Park Range, where family memories begin.
They said it wouldn't last. That was just wishful thinking. Gun for Hire Radio, the most listened to Second Amendment broadcast in the nation. 7 years running.
And this segment is brought to you by County Line Firearms. CountyLineFirearmsNJ.com, located on Route 10 East in East Hanover, across the street from the Best Buy. Stop by and see Carlos and support those who support us. So you have this diagnosis book. Go ahead.
Yes, it's a diagnosis book. Big, thick book. Comes out every 10 years or so. There's only 5 of them that have been out. But it's all the criteria and it's all the diagnosis to diagnose people. You know, it's important that the clinician knows what the person is and what to look for. So a story that I've always told is way back in my career, I worked in a drug treatment center, an outpatient program. And the psychiatrist there used to diagnose everyone as polysubstance dependent. So you're addicted to everything. And you would talk to the clients, like I'd be talking to David here, and you know, you'd be like, well, but he didn't use that drug, and he didn't use this drug, and it doesn't make sense. This psychiatrist believed if you used a substance one time in your life, you abused the substance. Mm. If you used that same substance twice in your life, you were dependent.
Mm.
So if you drank alcohol twice in your life, you were dependent on alcohol.
Carbohydrates in any of those categories?
No.
Oh, shoot.
So, you know, if you had this guy as your doctor and he's, you know, diagnosing you as, oh, you're alcohol dependent because you've drank twice in your life, like that could come back and, you know, bite you in the backside.
Now, Dave, you come to the range a lot on the crazy busy weekends. Bring your other buddies sometimes and everything. What do you think of, you know, the whole diversity and everybody shooting at the range and stuff?
You
drive down from Bergen County, right?
Yeah, I live over at Ramsey. Yeah. The last time I was here was with guys that I work with.
Yeah.
One of them never shot before.
Did you get him to join the NRA? Did you make him pro gun?
Right now he put in for his FID card, so he lives out in Vernon, so it should be a short wait. It shouldn't be too long. He He's been going all out, buying a safe. You know, he's looking into it.
Safe, responsible handling. See,
yeah,
that,
he's a good guy.
Sandy always says, each one, reach one. And that's our job, to keep bringing people in, introduce them, and break those. Again, the stereotype that every psychiatrist has a couch, the stereotype is every range is we're all white supremacists and hillbillies.
Almost.
You know, but that's the stereotype. And you could actually meet your next wife if you come to the range.
He had a blast. He had a great time. He was nervous at first, you know. He was excited throughout the week.
Be.
Yeah,
right.
But then when he came in, of course, he was a little nervous to shoot, but he jumped right in there. He, you know, grabbed the gun. I showed him how to use it, did a, you know, a quick little breakdown, and he was just having a blast, man. He was shooting like crazy.
When people, especially men, aren't nervous their first time shooting, I'm nervous.
Yeah, that's a little creepy. Yeah.
But when somebody's nervous, I'm like, good, that means they're smart.
Right.
You know, because...
Yeah. And they're going to pay attention.
Yeah. The first time you drove, were you nervous?
Of course, absolutely. I remember taking
you
the test.
Faked
I was freaking
it.
Out.
You faked it that you weren't nervous in front of friends, but you were scared shit.
Of
okay, Dave, what were you going
to
say?
I wanted to ask you that, too, because you were saying, you know, the first time people shoot. I was always wondering, what was the first gun you ever shot?
A handgun was a Smith & Wesson revolver, like a 586, like a 6-inch.
You're
Charlie
young buck,
Padula,
you're a young kid? Or?
Charlie Padula that works for me now. We're friends since 7th grade. We met in junior high. He took me shooting when we were about 19 years old.
Okay.
The first gun I bought, it's on the rental wall. It has a new buttstock on it because Jimmy G dropped it and broke the buttstock.
No.
Okay, it's a Mossberg 500 that I bought in Kmart in Belleville in 1979 for $75.
I wasn't even born yet.
the guns, Doc, the guns were on the wall in Kmart. They only sold long guns. And the ammo was in a case, the shelving on the floor. I could have picked up a box of 12-gauge, the Mossberg off the shelf, and killed everyone in the Kmart. But things like that didn't happen for some reason. But I bought...
It's almost like the gun doesn't kill people.
Bought, and I still have that gun. That gun is here from 1979. It's been in my possession. Now it's the company's, but it's a Mossberg 500. Yep.
Wow.
So that was the first gun I purchased.
Oh, I gotta go rent that thing.
Yeah. And so
See if it's still shooting.
And I tell people all the time, it's a great gun,
great gun
to buy. So Doc, advice to people would be, if you're not feeling right, you should get help. That's what I tell everybody.
Talk to somebody.
Am I right?
I completely agree. Just talk to somebody.
Okay, because I hate to see somebody do something, you know, tragic. That's
irreversible. It's sad, and you see it a lot now. Unfortunately, you know, 2017, it happens more than it should.
Right.
And you were saying about that book. I was curious. Does the book get thicker as the years go along, or does it stay about the same size?
It stays about the same.
Okay.
But it changes.
If it gets bigger, that's going to be a problem. More people have
it changes, though. And what was it? Don't quote me, but the first or second edition, homosexuality was considered a mental illness.
That was with the times.
You know, now you would never think to say it was a mental illness. So, you know, things change. Things evolve. We get smarter in some aspects that, you know.
And page 257 describes my entire family.
You know,
well, that's the thing they teach you when you're in school for this, is that you will read and learn stuff and diagnose everyone in your family, and you will think you have everything.
For all of our listeners, the reason I feel it's important to have somebody like Dr. Optoff on is because I see it so many times, people approaching me here in confidence is, you know, don't deny it. Get help. Follow up. Not everything is tragic and the end of the world. You're not going to end up maybe on 50 drugs. You're not going to end up in a rubber room. It's not, you know, years ago they used to warehouse people with mental health issues, right? They manifested and got worse, and they just warehoused you.
Yep.
You know, you were number 785, Dave, and they pushed you in a corner. Today it's not like that. I mean, most stuff is treatable, right?
Most stuff is treatable. You know, when you're talking about anxiety and depression, which is the most common ones people are coming in for, sometimes it can easily be just talked through because it's situational. You know, someone passes away in your family.
Divorce. Financial.
When he passed away, that's when it kind of started. Now I see that it's more of like social kind of thing. Like if I'm going to take a flight, or if I'm going to go see a movie, I'm in a crowded place. You know, I get a little nervous.
It's called the media.
Some of it's normal.
Yeah,
right?
Some of it's normal.
There's another doctor that comes in here and said that if I was flying the plane, I wouldn't be nervous.
Right.
If I was in control.
That's
Dave.
True. Yeah.
And that's
what
it is.
That's what
people say.
And I use that all the time because I'm not a good passenger and I'm no backseat person in a car. I always own a truck or SUV.
Being in a car with him.
Right, because I drive.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But the doc told me that casually. I said, I always get like anxious when I'm in a plane. He's like, yeah, if you were the captain, you wouldn't be anxious because you're in control.
Right.
Yeah. I'm like, shit.
Or just knowing. I had a period of time, and I used to have to fly 6 or 7 days a week.
Right.
And I had a period of time, and I don't know what the hell triggered it, but I used to get extremely apprehensive about going on an airplane. And what fixed it for me was learning how to fly, like Anthony was saying. It was a control issue. It really wasn't, because you'd hear every noise. You'd be like, what the hell is that?
Mm-hmm.
What is that? Are the wheels supposed to come? And I would talk myself through the checklist in the beginning, and I was fine.
Right.
Yeah, I had it bad. I was going out to Texas. I won a giveaway from F1 Firearms out in Spring, Texas. And they were flying everybody out there. It was kind of like a group thing. And I was freaking out, man. I was shaking, and every little sound, you're looking around, you don't know. And that's exactly what it was. I felt like I wasn't in control,
and
control of myself.
You're not flying the plane. Exactly right.
I just sat there with my head tucked between my legs.
It's between the pilot, the co-pilot, and Haji with the box cutter.
Doc, this is a broad question. I'm segueing now. This is a broad question, Doc. But is anxiety and depression more prevalent in denser population areas and cities and stuff? Like we live in a rat race, right, Dave? You live in a rat race.
Yeah.
Like if I lived in, Cornhusk, Texas, would I be less apt to be stressful? Yeah, like
Dave was
saying.
I was wondering that, because I have a friend who was dealing with a lot of anxiety, and he moved out to like I think in the middle of nowhere in Arizona. You know, he's on like a farm, and I know he doesn't have like doctors, like a lot of things nearby like we do, and he doesn't take any like medication stuff like that, which he was when he was here. And he's like, oh, it's so much more stress-free. And he feels like it's changed his life, just moving to a different area. So I was curious the same thing, if it's, because you're in New York City.
How much is it environment? I mean, I know I'm not asking you to tell me an exact percentage, but it's got to be higher, right?
I would say it's higher because, it is a rat race, especially around this area. So I think there is some of it that is the area, the life we live, the exposure. There is a part that is chemically based.
Mm-hmm.
We know that people can have a deficiency of dopamine, and that's why they need antidepressants to help them. So you have that mix.
Sure.
But, the life we live, where we're constantly connected by phones and technology, and we're constantly connected, when we look back 10, 15 years ago, technology was supposed to help us work less.
Yeah.
And, be home. No, now, your boss expects you to answer the phone or the email and respond.
They know where you are at all times. There's no way around it.
But it's funny how you said dopamine for depression. So in general, in the United States, if I have an insulin deficiency, it's okay to be diabetic and take insulin. But if I have a dopamine deficiency, the stigma is it's not okay to take that to elevate me. You're crazy, right? See, and that's why, like a young guy like you, 29 years old, Dave, it's important because you're going to be bringing shooters in and stuff, and you're going to be in my position where people are going to be telling, my girlfriend left me, or I'm going through a divorce, or my mom died, and I'm feeling stressed. And you could step in and say, listen, bro, you have guns and everything. Are you feeling okay? You feel like you're going to hurt yourself or someone else? Like just a dialogue and kind of guide and say, listen, it's not the end of the world. Because that's what I and everybody listening, I preach this all the time. I'm like, stop, go get help.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, just go get help.
I built my garage out. We were doing a lot of martial arts stuff, training guys in there. And I had a kid that, he did have firearms, things like that. And he was training with us doing martial arts. But he had a lot of issues. I don't want to say, I don't want to be the stereotype.
Sure, okay.
But he was having his situation at home and stuff like that. And, he was falling into, a deep depression kind of thing. And I'm like, listen, man, you got guns, you got stuff that can hurt and kill. You understand? I'm like, you got to have a clear head. And he kind of felt that the martial arts was helping, teach the discipline to understand, it kind of gives you a good head on
your
shoulders.
Plus, work some stress off too.
Absolutely. You sweat it out and stuff
but
like that.
Going back to your point about if you take antidepressants, there's something wrong with you. And with regards to guns, I know somebody who had their insurance rates raised. Because at one point during their life, they were going through a divorce. They went and saw somebody. The doctor gave them antidepressants. They took it for, 6 months, a year during this divorce proceeding. Then stopped, felt great. A couple years later, go apply for life insurance, and they were denied because, back then you took some antidepressants.
Unbelievable. That's
not so, fair. Not, I mean, it's a gun show. We're talking about guns. But it happens in all aspects where – wait a minute, I went to go talk to somebody. I was having, you know, marital issues. The doctor gave me antidepressants, took them, and now I have to pay a higher rate.
There just shouldn't be anything wrong with getting help. Getting help.
But it's a stigma.
Is
your friend okay?
Yeah, he's good. He's the one actually moved out to Arizona. So he's doing pretty good. Stress-free. Yeah.
Taxes in New Jersey will give you anxiety.
Taxes will make you move to Arizona, too.
New Jersey gives you anxiety in general.
Yeah. Wait till January.
I was just about to say, wait. Derek.
You know, as it turns out, one out of every three of us is caring for an aging parent. And if you're one of us, I don't have to tell you how difficult that can be. And until now, good sound advice that you could really trust was few and far between. The show is called Parents Are Hard to Raise, and every week it's jam-packed with expert advice and some pretty cool tips and tricks that'll help you and your parents grow older together without losing your minds. It's free expert elder care advice with a Jersey attitude. The show is hosted by my wife, Diane Berardi, who's been a practicing gerontologist for over 3 decades. So the insight's real, and the advice you get is battle-tested and ready to go. And it's often a little edgy. Parents Are Hard to Raise. Available on iTunes, Google Play, and on demand at iHeartRadio or at parentsarehardtoraise.org. And coming up this week on episode 34, our own Anthony Calandro guest hosts Parents Are Hard to Raise. Anthony shares some tips on how to scam-proof our aging parents. So if you've got aging parents or know someone who does, this is a great episode to share. parentsarehardtoraise.org.
So listen up, ladies and gentlemen. So the doc has been gracious to come in here, and he's going to share some more stuff with us. I have his website, and where are you located in New Jersey, Doc?
I have an office in Bergen County and one in Morris County.
Okay, Bergen and Morris County, and his website is OPTHOF, OptofPsychotherapy.com, OptofPsychotherapy.com. How else can people find you, Doc? Because I know you're a social media guy like me.
Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn. Google. Yeah, I think Google Plus now. I don't handle a lot of that stuff. It's too time-consuming, but I think those are the big three, Facebook, LinkedIn.
Not off the grid.
So not off the grid.
So
it can't
again,
be nowadays.
You know, Dr. Optoff, so it's optoffpsychotherapy.com, Bergen County, Morris County. You or anybody please don't hesitate. Dave came out, he's 29 years old, and he's telling us what he was feeling and everything. Don't feel stigmatized by this, and don't wait until it's too late. Get help for you or a loved one in your family. It's hard to talk to people about it, too, you know. Like, people, when people are showing signs and you approach them, they get very defensive. I find it very easy when someone comes to me and says, can I talk to you for a few minutes? And I'm going through a divorce. When they open the door, they're so much more receptive to getting help. But if you open the door, they want to punch you in the face.
Right.
So you have to be careful.
That's the thing. If somebody that is, like, you know, suffering with anxiety, depression, stuff like that, take the footstep in that door. Because as soon as you do it, you're there. You know you're there. It's like, all right, I might as well get it off my chest, you know, tell the doctor what's going on. Like, at least just do something to move forward towards it.
It's not the end of the world. I'm telling you right now.
There's actually a rapper named Logic that came out with a song that he was actually performing at the Music Video Awards recently. And the song is all about depression and the suicide hotline. The chorus of the suicide hotline. And I remember sitting there and watching the performance at the Music Video Awards. And he had people stand up wearing a shirt that just says, I want to live, and, you know, it has the phone number and stuff. And he performed, and they stood there, and, you know, they raised their hands, and they were happy they were on stage, but they were all people that suffered from situations like this. And it was heartbreaking, but at the same time, it was something to see.
Right, and we don't talk about it. I saw a guy speak several years ago at a high school that I was doing some work at, and the guy had a full audience of parents and kids, and he says, you know... And he was there to talk about drugs and alcohol, and he says, okay, I want you to stand up. If you or somebody you know have had a problem with alcohol, and he listed stuff, and people stood up. And then he said, if you or someone you know have had a problem with drug abuse or gambling or suicidal thoughts, and after 5 minutes, he goes, look around. He's like, there's 7 people sitting in this
And they're liars.
Right. This whole auditorium filled up. And he's like, you know, we're not asking you what, but if you know somebody, if you or someone you know suffered with anything, We all do.
Yep. But yet three of them stigma. Were still sitting there because they were too busy gambling on their online.
Exactly. Yeah. They were updating their Facebook page.
Yeah, they make shit too easy today to get
you
away from
You see it on
stuff.
The commercials, too. They're like, oh, you use real money now. And you
I
gamble
know.
On this. It's an app. And then next thing you know, you're losing your house.
Yeah.
You know, you tell the wife, I'm in debt.
I've always been afraid of addictive personalities, Doc, because my brother and my father had gambolic problems. And I always had a weight problem up until I was 53 years old. I was 410 pounds. So I've always been – oh, yeah, I was big.
Really?
I've always
he was
been,
a big guy.
Yeah,
he looked good, though.
I've always been reluctant to dabble in drugs. I don't drink any alcohol. When I was younger, you know, I wouldn't dabble in drugs. And I wouldn't dare now. My heart would explode. And like gambling, I stay away from all of those vices. It's just not – I'm always afraid. Even when I've had surgery, the doctor – I had wisdom teeth removed. The doc's like, give me Percocet. I'm like, I don't want them. He's like, well, just take them in case you need them. A week later, I threw them out because I'm afraid.
Yep.
Coming
That's
from
smart.
A family
my
with
doctor,
addictive
my
personality.
My doctor gave me Alprazolam. Yeah. And, you know, he said it should help. And I'm like, so this is basically Xanax. You're telling me.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah. And I'm like, well, this stuff's very addictive. I know that.
Yeah.
You know, and I was a little nervous about it. I fight to take it. Mm-hmm. You know, and my girlfriend, if I'm starting to have, like, you know, kind of a moment where I'm uncomfortable, you know, I'm nervous about stuff, you know, I was starting a new job or something like that.
All normal.
She's like, just take it. Just take it. And I'm like, you know, I'm nervous. I'm scared because it's just, you know, you feel like you're going to get addicted. Even though I know I'm not, like, I'm not going to just because I take one, I'm going to be addicted. You know,
well, that was one of the things that Christy did, which was good, was, you know, limit the amount that they can prescribe for painkillers.
Yes.
Like, you don't need 30 days worth of painkillers
because
you had a tooth pulled.
Yeah, they only gave you 10.
So. Right. Yeah,
it,
I only
it
got
goes
like
back
six.
To, you know, and this started under Obamacare, and this is one of the big issues. In fact, my wife, My wife's a gerontologist, and she does a show. Anthony was on a show last week. She did an entire episode on opioid addiction with elderly.
Mm-hmm.
And the big problem, and it's a huge problem.
Huge.
And the problem is that when hospitals were there started to be raided on patient satisfaction, I'm using air quotes here. It's on radio,
they
right?
were always in pain.
And typically, if you've ever been in an ER, every Friday night, you're going to have, we used to call them the frequent flyers would come in, and they would always be in pain, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you would know them, you know they're addicts, you know you're not going to prescribe anything for them. But now you had to prescribe them because if somebody, if they got a survey,
right,
and they rated you as leaving in pain, you were going to get called on the carpet. The hospital was going to get downgraded as far as their Medicare reimbursements and their Medicaid reimbursements.
So they just
so
gave it.
Everybody's just writing. Yep. Yeah,
like M&Ms.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's very sad. People don't realize, too, Bergen County, where I live, there's a huge problem right now with, like, heroin addiction and stuff like that with kids that are like,
which is amazing.
Well, it always drops the heroin because it's the cheapest
I'm not going to drop names, you know, because of the family and stuff like that, but I have lost seven friends.
No, we want names, address.
No. Seven friends in 1 year to heroin addiction, and not even a heroin addiction, just kids that were in football back in high school, stuff like that, got involved with the painkillers because they had a blown out knee or they got hit, you know, something, and they got addicted to heroin. And I one of them recently, I came knocking on my friend's door at his house, and he was scratching his neck, you know, he's bugging out, looked horrible, didn't even look like the way he used to look.
Wow.
And we couldn't believe it was him.
Mm.
And he's like, do you guys have something to drink? And he was kind of freaking out. He's like, they're after me. And we're like, who's after you? And he booked it. He just took off, ran. We never saw him again. And that was the last time I saw him. And I'm like, this is getting so out of control. I've lost seven guys that are three of them were like my best friends.
One of
them actually saved my life. It was a situation. It's a long story. I'm not going to get into it. But he saved my life. I saw him. Yeah, we were in town, and I was getting some ice cream and stuff like that because I'm a fat piece of shit. But we were going to be training that Sunday.
I'm with you.
Who said we're going to be training that Sunday at my house because I, you know, have the garage set up and everything. And I'm like, hey, man, I haven't seen you in a long time. Like, what's going on? And he said, oh, good. You know, I just got out of rehab. You know, just got back. And I'm like, yeah, you know, I heard that you were having some issues and stuff. He's like, yeah. I'm like, so you good now? And he's like, yeah, you know, I had the heroin situation that's going on. I'm like, no, I understand. He's like, you mind if I come train with you? I'm like, yeah. And then, now this is like this was Friday, right? So I'm like, yeah, come on through. We're going to be training on Sunday. I'm going to be opening the garage and stuff like that, getting the mats out, the bags out, hit the heavy bag a little bit. Come on in. He's all for it. He was like, definitely mark it down. Like, here's my number. I'm like, okay. And I was so happy to see that he got himself together, because we fell apart, you know, once he had that
sure.
problem.
Yeah,
with
you
the drugs.
Can't hang with somebody
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, I kind of cleared my way from all those kind of people. Sure enough, Saturday, I'm texting him. I'm like, I hope you're going to be there. Wasn't getting any answers. Sunday morning, can't figure out what's going on. Wondering where he is. I got other guys. They're all asking where he is. You know, they're all friends with him, too. They're like, where's he at? You know, we were trying to figure out what's going on. I get in contact with his phone. His mom answers. She's a mess, crying up a storm.
Yeah, that'll stress you out.
Suicide through heroin. Committed suicide. Wrote a letter. Said he's no good. He wasn't. He couldn't break it. That's
demons.
Horrible. Yep. To think that you can't beat this. You know, the addiction or the fact that it even happened in the first place, because of how easy it was for this guy to get painkillers, things yep. like that, is very sad.
And hearing that tragedy and having the doc in the studio, I want to tell you, in the 20 years that I've been advising people when they come to me whether they should get help or not, I have only had success stories come back to me, doc. A year later, 3 years later, I went to see the doc. I took care of it. I'm feeling better now. I got my guns back. I'm doing this. I'm doing, you know,
yep.
like that's all I hear now, Dave, is success stories. So
yeah.
there's light at the end of the tunnel.
Take
I haven't had
back.
One end badly. In all the years that have come through, they
right.
come in and shoot
but
and everything.
Take
so,
your life back, you know. Don't let it control you. Yeah, control
exactly.
everything
people,
you do.
People don't want to hear it. People don't want to hear it. So, Doc, what else you got for us before we throw you off the
have
show?
You, have you seen any change in society? I mean, one of the things we see a lot, you know, we talk about this when we were kids. You could walk into a Kmart, but that's where I bought my first shotgun, was in a Kmart. Nothing like this happened before. We're starting to see a change in society. Can you attribute it to anything? Or are you noticing any differences?
As far as what?
Just the level of violence, the level of, well, not even so much the level of violence. I think, you know, we're dealing a lot, too, with first world problems, where mm-hmm. we don't realize how easy we have it in this country.
I saw a post that was like that. It said the guns don't change. It's the people, it's the society in general. Yeah. Nothing's changed.
A quote I use a lot that I heard from someone was, we're a society of narcissistically wounded children raising narcissistically wounded children.
Yeah.
You know, we our parents didn't get their needs met. We played out with our kids. We become adults. You know, I think that, you know, we're so self-absorbed. It's a me society.
Sure.
And I think the other part is, when we talk about some of the non-biological anxiety, depression, mood disorders, it's the 24/7 news cycle.
Yep. Yeah,
you know, when you guys were younger, because I'm going to distance myself in age, I'm going closer to Dave's age here. when, you know, you grew up, okay, there was the 5 o'clock news, maybe the 6 o'clock news, and then after that it was, you know, Jeopardy and TV shows. Now it's, okay, you're just watching the banner, and if, you know, or you're sitting here and your phone blinks that there's a shooting, there's, you know, the president's going to, there's always stuff going on. So where do we unwind? Where do we decompress? Right.
A lot of things are changing too. You got babies having babies. Like I say, you know, it's young kids. They're having kids at a very early age too. And they're not, you know, financially stable or they're
They're having kids,
you know,
because they look at these TV shows.
Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Someone got famous because they did a sex tape.
Correct.
Jersey Shore's coming back.
Where the aberration becomes normal.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, it's
unfortunately, Jersey Shore is coming back, so
right.
we're gonna have that going on again.
yeah, it's
so I think that it's the media, it's the 24/7 coverage of things. You know, when we look back on 9/11, you know, one of the things that we started seeing was, for weeks, we kept watching that same footage of that plane going in.
Right. I don't watch that footage anymore, by the way.
Right.
I changed the
channel. But that was one of the first times where we started seeing we're constantly exposed to this.
That's right.
You know, over and over again. When you look at anything now, it's constant coverage, and it brings it, you know, I think.
Well, you know, the news media, there's a saying in the news media, if it bleeds, it leads.
Bleeds.
Right.
Yep. So, Dave Mergel from Ramsey, Bergen County, Gun for Hire alumni, thank you for coming on the show.
Of course. Thank you.
And Dr. Gerard Optoff, OPTOF, OptoffPsychotherapy.com, Bergen and Morris Counties. You see, we got another friend here. Listen, that doesn't mean there's a slam dunk. You can't go in there with your first ex-wife's head in a bowling bag and ask him to write a letter for you to get a gun. It's not going to happen. But if you're feeling something, at least you have someone that can relate to the trials and tribulations that we deal with in the state of New Jersey. So optoffpsychotherapy.com. We got a ton of classes coming up. Multi-state CCW. Get a non-resident carry permit now because HR 38 is moving along. Shameless plug there. January 6th, CPR AED. January 7th, quick clock class. January 20th, protective pen. We have Urban Pistol 1, 2, and 3, Urban Carbine 1, 2, and 3 at the Academy. If you want to build your own AR while they're still legal, contact Jimmy at Gun for Hire for our Build-A-Bear program. Guys, I can't thank you enough
for taking time out of your schedule
to come in. And I think, Doc, you're closer to Sandy and I's age than you are to David's, son of a bitch.
I still think I'm young.
I caught that.
You were looking at your phone, so I thought that got passed.
I'm checking for news feeds, anything I can come into. Go ahead, Sandy. Take it away.
Well, thank you guys for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
If you guys are interested to hear what Anthony had to say, he was on Parents Are Hard to Raise.
Yes.
Parentsarehardtoraise.org this week. Actually, last week. But you can still tune in.
Some safety tips for the seniors.
Yeah, it was really good. It was an excellent show.
I'll be on again after this check clears.
Thanks, Winston.
Bye, Win.
All right. Well, you've done it again. You've wasted yet another perfectly good hour listening to Gun for Hire Radio. Gun for Hire Radio is a Catholic media production. Music used in this broadcast is managed by Cosmo Music LLC, New York, New York. We see you guys next week. Love you.